You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Benjamin Krause. Ben, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Ben, I saw an article that you had sent out to me. I'm on your email list about VA bonuses, and the headline of your article is Veterans Affairs doles out huge bonuses despite corruption, and that came from a USA Today article, More Bonuses for VA Employees Despite Ongoing Problems at the Agency. I want to talk about that in great detail in a moment, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
Yeah, sure, Dave. I'm a veteran rights attorney and activist on behalf of veterans. I function as both an attorney and a journalist. I myself am a disabled veteran. I was in the U.S. Air Force Special Operations Command. During that time, I experienced a non-combat related traumatic brain injury. And after getting out of the military, I had all kinds of problems getting work and keeping work and some difficulty with school, and found out that basically I had a traumatic brain injury that the VA wasn't giving me rehabilitative treatment for, which was causing me to have problems in the workplace or whatever. So as a result of that, and some of those difficulties, I started pushing back against the VA to get help and support, and realized that the primary veteran service organization community lacked the will or desire to stand up for veterans like me who were being abused or not getting the help that we deserved from the VA system. So I started writing and, of course, going to school and becoming more intelligent, eventually became an attorney, and started exposing stories and exposing scandals through my work as a journalist and also my work as an attorney. So they work kind of hand in glove in many ways. So as a disabled veteran, and now a disabled veteran turned attorney, turned journalist, I'm able to expose or address scandals within the VA, including corruption, publicly and also in the courts. So the article that you talked about, which is on my website, disabledveterans.org, which is where I write daily about different scandals or different problems or give veterans insights into their benefits, et cetera. That's where I published that particular story. And I've been tracking corruption in the VA for many years and how that affects veterans and how veterans are victimized by greedy or fraudulent or worse VA executives and leadership and some employees at the lower levels as well. So this particular story jumps into the issue of corruption and the issue of bonuses. Should VA employees get bonuses anyway? Has the use of the bonus system, which as I understand it, was really ginned up under the Clinton administration when they were trying to reinvent government and trying to reinvent the VA to turn it into more of like a Disney model. Is the use of bonuses good, or is this really creating smarter, more corrupt bureaucrats and bean counters who are able to game the system, harm veterans because there's no accountability and veterans don't matter, according to a lot of those individuals, and then make a ton of money, meanwhile bankrupting our VA and not giving the resources that veterans need? Case in point, we have the waitlist scandal that erupted that was actually going on and set into motion under Clinton. And when Bush took office, it was already a known issue. Nobody did anything, even under the Bush administration. Then moving into the Obama administration, up until CNN outed the scandal after many veterans had died waiting for health care while smart bureaucrats were gaming the system and withholding health care from veterans while also receiving great bonuses, because on paper, it appeared the veterans were getting the resources they needed in a timely manner. So that's kind of the background of this particular story and the background of me, veteran rights activist, attorney, and journalist, writing about the agency that I love to hate on, which is the Department of Veterans Affairs.
And I'm sure they like you right now and probably going to get to like you even more as time goes on.
I'm definitely not going anywhere. So VA is going to have to learn to love me, whether they like it or not.
Beautiful. We need more people like you out there, Ben. And you said something about the Disney model. What exactly is that?
The Disneyization of Department of Veterans Affairs. So I've published a couple photos of McDonald with Mickey Mouse ears from the Mickey Mouse Club. I published a couple photos like that because he is a large advocate for implementing the customer service model that Disney uses at the VA. And he's been working toward that type of understanding for some time, probably even when he was at his former employer. They've been talking within the VA about using the Disney model even before McDonald came on board to increase the appearance and perception of happiness. And so what they focus on in this Disney model is not so much whether veterans actually get what they need, but whether veterans feel good while they're getting less, right? I think that that's kind of at the end of the day what they're really trying to do. Can they evade full resource allocation to veterans by making veterans feel good about being cheated out of their benefits? I kind of think that's really more of what's going on. So can they give us the perception that we're getting what we need, even if it's not? And so McDonald, the most recent iteration of this, but they've been working on reinventing government ever since Bill and Hillary Clinton were in office. And during that time, they created a model, which is this business-centric Disney model of customer service, which I guess maybe in a way would be great so long as you get all the benefits and all the health care and all the other things that you need that the government is responsible to give you and has agreed to give you. That's not the case with the VA. So instead, what they focus on is perception and being happy, even if you're not getting what you're supposed to get. So that's what I'm referring to with the Disneyization of the VA.
Thank you for explaining that. Of course, McDonald, you're talking about Robert Allen McDonald, who's the 8th United States Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and you alluded to his previous job. He's the retired chairman, president, and CEO of a little company called Procter & Gamble. He was born in 1953, and he's out in the Midwest where you're at. Where are you located, Ben?
In the Minneapolis area.
Okay.
So McDonald is from, I believe, Cleveland, Ohio, right? Or somewhere in that.
I don't know. You know, you can't really depend on Wikipedia 100%. They're saying he was born in Gary, Indiana and grew up in Chicago, but who knows? You may be right. Plus, they're
right,
wrong
right.
A lot of times. Let me just look at this article here because it's pretty astounding. The bonuses that were handed out, and you mentioned Wall Street as well, and of course Wall Street is well known for getting bonuses, and who knows why they really get the bonuses. I don't know. I can't figure it out. But the only thing I could think of is that they're screwing people, and the more people that get screwed, the more bonuses you're going to get. People who were given bonuses here that you pointed out, the senior executives who received $3.3 million in bonuses, 300 of them, more than 300 of them, for an average payment of about $10,000 each. And of course, the average rank and file person got about $900 on average. So they got 10 times more, a little more than 10 times more. How could they rationalize giving this fella, this Dr. Darren Deering, who was fired as chief of staff at the Phoenix VA healthcare system in June of this year for negligent performance of duties and failure to provide effective oversight? Of course, we know, and you alluded to this scandal where vets are dying. How could they give this guy a $5,000 bonus? And in light of the rankings or the ratings that they got, that's pointed out here in the article, the 5-level scale, unacceptable, minimally successfully, fully successful, should say successful, but they have a typo here, exceeds fully successful and outstanding. How could it be that all of these senior executives were ranked high and that, as I said in this USA Today study going back 4 years, no executive had been scored in the lower two categories, and all of a sudden this erupts here, this scandal? So I know it's a lot what I just said, but what I want to know, Ben, is how is it that they could rationalize giving these bonuses, and how is it that they can rationalize giving the bonuses in light of the fact that something must have been going wrong, and have they been covering this whole thing up the whole time?
That's a great question. I think on the surface, there is no rational reason for it, which if there is no rational reason, then we have to look to the irrational or to the possibly illegal reasons that you might have, because I can't think of one reason why I would ever give anyone a bonus when that person is linked to negligently causing deaths of veterans and their doctor. So I can't think of a reason why Dr. Deering would have been entitled to such a bonus. Plus, I believe he was on paid leave for a little while during that time. So not even clear what kind of work he was doing to justify that. So my guess is that the bonus that he was at least given was likely the result of some kind of negotiation with his attorney within the VA to basically dismiss him. And maybe they negotiated a payout for him, which is what they've been doing throughout the VA, whether it's a whistleblower or someone else, instead of taking somebody to task, which they should be doing regarding accountability after a person's been proven to engage in illegal, unlawful, or at least negligent actions that resulted in someone else's death. Instead of taking those individuals to task, they've been just paying them off, unfortunately, and that's been happening across the board. There are many examples of it. A person needs to stop and think and wonder whether federal employees should be getting bonuses to begin with, because the bonus structures end up resulting in forms of gamification of the way that they count the beans, so to speak. And so you end up with smarter bureaucrats that know how to game the system to increase their bonuses. But a lot of times that comes at the expense of veterans. And as we know within the VA, because they lack accountability to such an extent as they do, that it ends up resulting in no accountability for anyone caught committing these frauds. And in addition to that, veterans tend to die before anyone will pay attention to the frauds that are going on. this particular scandal at Phoenix had been ongoing since at least the 90s, and it had been a nationwide problem. It wasn't just at Phoenix. But it took a bunch of veterans dying and CNN catching wind of it before the government and before the VA suddenly developed the political will to evaluate it. And even then, they covered it up. Their own investigation immediately after the waitlist scandal showed up in Phoenix and became a nationwide issue, they immediately shut down the Office of Medical Inspector. And it's a key issue. There's no reason to shut it down, but they shut it down, which resulted in all of the investigations being shunted back to each location alongside some other investigators. But there wasn't that consolidated look that you would get from the Office of Medical Inspector because Sloan Gibson IV shut it down.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you that. I'm glad you brought that up about whether or not it even makes sense to pay bonuses. In my view, it doesn't. You're supposed to be there serving the veterans. Why should you be living better than the veterans themselves when you see these people who have gone through what they have gone through? And it's horrible. I mean, we're both veterans. We've seen people with missing legs and arms, traumatic brain injury, as you experienced, all of these ailments and injuries that they experienced from serving their country. And then you get some guy in a suit. Here it says the number of employees receiving bonuses jumped by more than 20% from 2014, and the total amount paid out increased by 24%. It's really a slap in the face. And of course, the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, who I'm sure you're familiar with, Representative Jeff Miller, he's actually my congressman in my district. It's funny. He's retiring, I believe. He doesn't mess around, this guy. You see all these phony politicians, they're always smiling. This guy doesn't smile much, which is a good thing. Has Miller been able to gain any ground?
You know, at the end of the day, I mean, he's been there for, I believe, 20 years, give or take. At the end of the day, you know, we still have waitlist scandals. We still have these issues with bonuses. We still have a lot of problems with the agency. And I don't see anyone being taken to task for perjury. We know that VA executives have perjured themselves before this review committee, and yet no one's been arrested. No one's been taken to task for it. So I would say that I wish that Miller and the HVAC committee, so the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, would do more. They should probably take some cues from the Benghazi committee and what the Benghazi committee did and how they've been prosecuting different claims against Hillary Clinton for one incident and take that veracity and take some of those notes from those individuals. It looks like a lot of the committee members are actually former prosecutors. Pull some prosecutors over to HVAC and have them interrogate VA in a way that might be more effective. So Miller's done great things, don't get me wrong, but we still have these problems. And that tells me that despite somebody who has the teeth that Miller has, I mean, there's no question that he is not a pushover when it comes to the VA, but there's something missing because we still have these problems. We still have the VA lying to the committee and getting caught lying to the committee. So why are we not doing more? Up until very recently, this is about a year ago, they wouldn't swear VA employees in when they would give testimony, which was really unusual. They would swear in, for example, I believe Lance Armstrong and some of the individuals who were believed to be doping when they brought them in for the steroid reviews, they would raise their right arm and swear that they were not going to commit perjury. For whatever reason, for about 20 years, there was a deal struck supposedly where VA was not having to do that and they were not having to swear in. Up until last year, because of the problems that we experienced with Diana Rubens and some of those folks who were actively defrauding the American taxpayer internally and gumming up the VA responsible for the backlist and all kinds of other problems, because of their lack of desire to be truthful with the American public, finally Miller started implementing swearing in those individuals before they would provide testimony. But up until that point, we weren't doing it. I have no idea exactly what deal was struck behind closed doors with the committee. But whatever it was has hamstringed the veteran rights movement and as a result have received numerous statements from the VA that are either knowingly inaccurate or just all out false and then are not able to do anything about it after we catch those folks lying on the stand. Why is it that we let the VA get away with lying about veterans? And yet we'll go after Hillary Clinton where four people died. Veterans are dying every day. 20 veterans die every day from suicide because they lack health care and mental health care, and they commit suicide. And yet we do apparently nothing in comparison to the Benghazi committee, where they're going after this lady tooth and claw in a way that I think they should. I think that's justifiable. But why aren't we doing the same for veterans? Why are we not getting more aggressive? Why are we not swearing in these VA officials every single time? And when they lie, why are we not hanging them out for perjury? Why are we not doing that? These are some fundamental questions, and I think the Miller's done a good job, but I think they've been soft on the VA for 20 years, if not longer. I'd like that to stop. I just don't know what to do. As a reporter and as a veteran rights activist and attorney, I can only do so much, but I'll tell you what, the HVAC could do more if they have the same authority as these other committees seem to have. Why are they not doing more? And that's a question I would like Miller to answer.
That's a great question. And I didn't know about that. I don't think very many people know that these VA people did not have to raise their right hand. Did you notice that they weren't being sworn in, or did you get that from something you read?
So that was something I noticed and looked into. I had actually asked one of the old Veteran Service Organization policy directors. I don't want to say which one, but anyway, I went to that individual and asked why they're being allowed to mislead the public and why there's no accountability. And it seemed very suspicious to me because I went to one and I watched during the hearing while one of the executives from VA made false statements that I knew were false right to Congress. And I'd asked later, like, well, why is this going on? And the individual told me that they had a backroom deal to not make VA officials swear in before they give testimony. And that's what I was told, that there was a backroom deal. And finally, if you watch the progression of Miller finally doing it, that would have been with Diana Rubens, I believe, was one of the first people that he had forced to swear in. It was like an earth-shatter moment for them at the committee. They kept saying, well, we're going to do it. We're going to do it if you keep doing this. And then the VA called their bluff, and so they finally had to do it. It was really unusual because it's something, again, that if you're going to testify about steroids, Congress makes you swear in. If you're going to talk about Benghazi, they make you swear in. If you're going to talk about any of these other issues where you need to give testimony, they usually swear in. For some reason at the VA and the HVAC committee, they just don't do it. It is not a normal practice. I'm not clear why that is, but I definitely think it's a practice that needs to be nipped in the tail immediately.
Well, absolutely. Thank you for explaining that. Now I know the genesis of it. And thank you for elaborating on Miller. Now, you and I became acquainted with one another several years ago because of my activism against the disabled American veterans. And we have a similar situation here with the DAV, that they're paying out huge amounts of money to these people. And of course, this isn't an arm of the government, but they are linked in a great way, some might say inextricably linked to the VA. In fact, you had sent me a photograph of a VA van with DAV advertising on it, right?
Right, yeah, and really struck me. I've noticed this before, but I thought this was particularly interesting because I was gassing up my own vehicle and looked over, and there was this very elaborately detailed Ford, I think it was, with DAV all over it and DAV emblems, et cetera, probably very expensive advertising emblems all over the vehicle and paint job. And yet the license plates were clearly for the U.S. government. Now that strikes me as interesting because I've never seen a U.S. government vehicle advertise for a private organization, or at least a non-governmental organization, which at its root then makes me wonder if DAV, Disabled American Veterans, is actually nothing more than a governmental organization under some other guise. So I'm curious about that. But nonetheless, an individual not dressed in any kind of official VA garb gassed it up and drove off, but not before I took a photo of it because it was interesting. You know, very nice looking car with this very expensive advertisement on it for DAV with government plates. I mean, I've just never seen that before. I've never seen any federal government vehicle with advertising for any kind of thing. So I thought that was interesting, and maybe I'm missing something, but as an acute observer of the world around me, I thought that was interesting, that
yes,
they would be actively advertising for the supposed veteran organization that's representing veterans against the VA. It makes me wonder about that relationship.
Yeah, that's not good. This form that the Disabled American Veterans is required to fill out because they are a 501c, I believe it's a 4, 501c4, I think a 501c4 is not required to reveal who the donors are. 501c3 is. If you look at this form, it's 136 pages. They have to file it with the Internal Revenue Service. But if we look at the contributions and grants And they compare the prior year. So this 990, it was for the year ending December 31st, 2015, and it was filed in the middle to the end of August of this year. And anyone can get it. You can go to dav.org, and you can access it from there. What's important about this 990 is they reveal the contribution and grants from the prior year, so that would be 2014 versus the current year, which is 2015. Prior year, about $115 million in contributions and grants. 2015, about $118 million. So figure about $3 million more they got in contributions and grants for the year 2015 over 2014. The total revenue, which includes not just contributions and grants, but program service revenue, investment income, whatever they invest in the stock market or whatever, for the year of 2014, the investment income was about $21 million. And for the year of 2015, it was about $11 million. So it was $10 million less.
Which page are you looking on, Dave?
This is page two in the revenue section right there. And the total revenue for 2014 was $142 million approximately. For 2015 was $137 million. So it was less. So they actually brought in less money. They brought in $5, $6 million less. If we look at the expenses, the total expenses, which is line 18, right, it was about $140 million in 2014. In 2015, about $10 million more, about $150 million. So that brought their revenue less expenses for 2014 was $2,675,000, at least their plus column. For 2015, they lost $13 million.
Right. And they certainly did not deduct their pay, though. And that's kind of the interesting fact here. Very similar trajectory as the VA, it would appear, regarding payments for not only the lead employees, but also the former employees. It looks like the former CEO of DAV is still on the payroll, earning a nice cold $150K as an ex-CEO, which is fascinating.
Yeah, and he was, of course, the adjutant, this fella. That's what I'm saying, Ben. It doesn't seem to make sense to me if you look at the money that these people are pulling in. This spend is on page 113. If we look at the highest paid individual there, who is this J. Mark Burgess, the national adjutant who replaced this fella, Arthur Wilson, that you mentioned. J. Mark Burgess has a base compensation of about $244,000. And let me remind the listeners that the Disabled American Veterans is a charity. His bonus was $9,000, other compensation $6,000, but his retirement and other deferred compensation, which means that they're making so much money that they don't have to take it, they could defer it so it's not taxed, was $221,467, and he had some more non-taxable benefits. So the total that he earned, with quotes around it, by working for a veterans charity for the year 2015 was $486,000.
Wow, that's like Wounded Warrior money there.
Exactly. Another organization that really lines their pockets. You go from this fella, Burgess, who I've met, you go from him, and the next highest paid is this Gary Augustine. I've met him as well, executive director, national headquarters, $400,000. Then you go from him to Christopher Clay, who's the attorney there, general counsel, who I've met as well, $357,000. And then you go to Barry Jesenoski, who I've met as well, executive director, national headquarters, $350,000. And then you've got the lesser paid people, $276,000, $220,000. It goes on, and then it goes to Arthur Wilson, as you mentioned, who hasn't been there for a couple years. And he got, you mentioned, $154,341. And of course, his son is an employee there because they have to reveal that. And his pay has been increasing over the years. And he's like a tech guy there at the DAV. His pay has gone up from, like, I think it started at like $70,000 when he was on board. It's up to $108,314. Ben, something's wrong here. Or as you said, is it just me? Is it just you? Or is something wrong here?
Well, I'll tell you what's wrong here is I'm clearly in the wrong line of work.
Yeah.
I'm not making any of that kind of money, and I'm an attorney, for Pete's sake. Most attorneys don't make that kind of money. It's interesting in looking at these numbers, wishing that I made some different career choices. But nonetheless, here I am, struggling to get by month to month, as most small solo practitioner attorneys do. We're not making as much money as people think. Then I look at this kind of pay scale and like, wow, the guy's making so much that he can actually defer $200,000 in compensation, because once you make more than $200,000 a year, then the rest is golf money. So I'm glad he's, as the head of DAV, making enough to be able to defer practically 100% of that same income for other purposes. Yeah, wow, you know, $485,000, that's a sweet deal, that is for sure. But when you look at them being net negative for their revenue, so negative $13 million, it certainly does sound like what we have seen within the VA, and yet they're still getting these great bonuses. The head of fundraising, his bonus is $24,000. So he made basically 20% of his base salary he made in bonus, and yet he didn't raise more money to make up for that difference. So that's interesting. So I don't see a 20% increase in fundraising, as far as I could tell. So how did that work out? Who made that decision and wrote that check? As a DAV member myself, I'm curious about how my dues were allocated. I think I need to write these guys a letter requesting a little bit of an explanation about why the former CEO was paid $150,000 last year. He does own a few houses that are mansions, and he does own some cars that are very expensive. So
yes,
my guess would be that maybe the maintenance on the cars were just more this year, and he needed to keep them polished up in the event that some other bureaucrat came to his house and he needed to show off. So I get it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and of course, it wouldn't be so bad if these folks were in the private sector here. But when you're hiding behind veterans, you're hiding behind not just veterans, but you're hiding behind disabled veterans and the 200,000 or 300,000 veterans who are living out on the streets. That's a little problematic, and that's a little shameless. Just to put this in perspective, Ben, and you mentioned the Clintons, how they changed a lot. And since 2001, President of the United States has earned a $400,000 annual salary, along with a $50,000 annual expense account, a $100,000 non-taxable travel account, and just $19,000 for entertainment. And this, of course, was approved by Congress and Bill Clinton in 1999, went into effect in 2001. So Burgess, if we just look at the salary, he's making more than the President of the United States. If we look at the expense account and the travel account and so on, next year he should pass it no problem with the increases they get in their bonuses, even though they're taking in less money. So it seems like the DAV, a charity, is mirroring the VA, which is a part of our government, and really pointed out very succinctly by that photograph you took of that VA van with the skin wrap of the DAV's logo to promote the DAV. So is there anything else more we have to say?
I don't think so, but I'm definitely going to start requesting documents from VA, asking VA for information to help me understand better exactly what we're looking at.
That would be great, Ben. And I'm sure
that
once you get the answers, you're going to send that out in your email. What if folks want to sign up for your email alerts? How would they do that? What's the best way for them to do
that? Yeah, so if they go to my website, they can, on the right-hand bar or in the footer of the homepage, just enter in their email address, and then they can be added to the daily newsletter that I send out. I write every business day during the week, and they can sign up for that and for other alerts. There are also a ton of free guides there, so veterans wanting to get access to their records or seeking other help for their benefits can go there, enter in the email, and then they'll get whatever free guide is on the website.
Attorney Benjamin Krause, Ben, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners.
Thank you.